Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
At me over there. I'm going to ask you to do something tonight because I like to be close to folks. So if you are mobile, agile, tactile, and ready to do anything that preacher asks you to, I want all you all on the outside to scoot in the middle. And if you're out there and don't mind moving down a little closer, because tonight, we're going to have a conversation instead of me speaking. And y'all are going to have to bridge the gap and fill in the answers. Because tonight we're talking about a very, very, very important circle, very important thought. And what I started to do tonight was bring all of us senior Christians up front and put all you young squirts right back there in behind us, where you could just kind of observe as us more mature people have an opportunity to have a conversation and to visit. It is truly great for me to get to be over with you tonight, and I want to thank you so much for the topic of conversation that you gave me. Because of all the things that I'm beginning to understand is, I'm beginning to understand Moses a little better. And that should be scary because I don't know a whole lot about Moses until after he came of age. And when he came of age, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer the scorns and afflictions of God's people than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Well, I've had a long season with sin, but it has truly been good for me to be able to come back over here where I started out working with young people. With young people 4,100 years ago. And it does me so much good to see some of those young people who have grown older just like I have. I mean, I can't tell you, when I look at the Bishop kids and I think of how small they were, and now take a look at them, all grown up here in the middle of everything that's going on. You know, I look around and I think of church camp from 4,100 years ago, and David Craig was there, and he could run about a minute and a half mile. He was amazing back then, what kind of good shape he was in. But here we are today. We've grown a little bit older. For those of us who are here to enjoy our senior years, aren't we kind of like Minnie Pearl? We're just so proud to be here. Because things change in our lives, and we don't always get to enjoy all of that we have laid by in store and all the plans that we have made. So tonight, what I wanted us to do is I wanted us to talk just a little bit about what can we do for those of us who are growing older. Now, I want to bridge the gap on that, guys and gals, because it's really important that we understand that most of the involvement of my generation also involves the generation below me, because there ain't much of a generation left beyond me. Dad and I were standing one night in the back of the funeral home outside the double doors in the chapel, and we were standing at the back row of where we had the seats set up. And Dad looked at me and he said, "You know, son, when I came here, I was burying the grandparents of my friends." And he said, "It didn't seem like any time till all of a sudden I was burying the parents of my friends." He put his hands in my pockets and in his pockets. As long when Dad stuck his hands in his pockets, you better listen, because he was getting ready to say something. And after that last line about, and you know, I've looked around and now I'm burying the parents of my, then I was burying the parents of my friends, and sticks his hand in his pockets and he looks at me and he says, "You know, son, now you're burying my friends." What was Dad telling me? Yeah. That he's about done. He was almost finished up. But he was just saying to me, "Bill Mack, you're going to blink your eyes one of these days, and the next thing you're going to be doing is you're going to be burying your friends." Now, I could ask you to raise your hands to see how many of us find ourselves in that situation today. But a lot of us do. Did you ever think you would be attending as many funerals as you seem to attend after you reach that 60-plus age group? I'm going to test the waters before we get into what I really want to say tonight, and I'm going to test the waters. Do you all not have a clock in this place? Man, how does a preacher get a job over here? I'd like to kind of be in that scenario. Excuse me just a minute while I set my little beeper so it'll remind me when it's 9:30 and time to go home. There we go. I got it going now. When we look at where we are and when we look at what we're doing and we think about what this journey is all about, I can't help but think of what Dad said to me. And you know, that's really not all bad. But I tell you something I've learned in Centerville lately. Al Williams was our senior life minister, our senior life elder in charge. And when Al was kind of getting a little older and his health wasn't hardly as good as it had been, I said, Al, I want you in your elder's will to leave Bill our senior group. Because I've worked with these teenagers till I am an old man and I can't keep up with them anymore. So I would really like to leave the youth and go to my age group and enjoy them. And so as it worked out, that happened. Well, in the process of that happening, I've learned some marvelous things. When I was a youth minister, if you said, we're going, and we did this, I don't know how many of y'all remember this, but we had Wednesday Night Lives. And we did it with the West End Church, with the Graymere Church, with the Centerville Church. Once a quarter, we loaded our kids up, and all of us went to the same place. Over here, to Centerville, to West End. We ended up going other places after that. But it was a unique night, because we kind of all got together. And we had time to talk and time to visit. And our Wednesday evening services then literally would end up being two and a half times longer than the hour now. We would often spend close to 3 hours together as a group of kids. And it was absolutely wonderful to do that. I could post a bulletin board with a sign-up sheet for young people. Every one of them would sign it. I'm going. And I would put out on the outside, cost $3. Y'all remember when we could do something for $3? Cost $3. So we'd sign up, we'd get to the church building to go, and a lot of things had come up and they couldn't come, but no one had called me to let me know that. I had two buses there one night, big bus and little bus, ready to go with drivers and everything. We had barely enough to get on the little bus. And about half of them forgot their what? And about half of their parents forgot to come do what? Pick them up when it's over. You're exactly right. Do you know what I like about working with us? Number one, if you're signed up, you fully intend to go. Number two, if you're not going, you'll call me and tell me. Number three, before I can get out the back door after I've made an announcement, here, can you take my money? Here, go ahead. I've got my name on the list. Take my money. No, we'll pick it up that night. No, I want you to take it now. Ain't going to do it. You bring it that night. And the most wonderful thing about the whole deal is, when you had teenagers coming, you said we're going to leave at 7 so you could get away at 7:45. Because they were always late. My group is never late. I get there 5 minutes before it's time to leave. They're all on the bus, ready to go. Got it started up, air conditioning, heater going, radio going. They're just ready to go. Anytime they're ready to go. And I bring them home and they get themselves home. And it's fabulous. And it's been nice to be able to do that. So I thank Brother Al for letting me slip into that. And a lot of what we do has been modeled after the incredible program that you all have had for years for those of us who are older. And I want to tell you, without much ado, that it's fabulous because I'm talking about bridging the gap on both sides. When a husband and wife experience that hour in life when they have fulfilled the marriage vow until death do us part. When they have fulfilled that marriage vow, and all of a sudden there's one where there was two, and have been two for a long, long time. One of the things, and we call this in the study of grief and loss, there is a primary loss that occurs. And when the husband dies, that is the primary loss. But is that the only loss that occurs? What else goes with that? One wife will tell me, my security. And immediately I think of dollar bills. But when I talk to her at length, what I find out is she's lived at the end of a country road for a long time. And her husband's been a traveling salesman ever since she moved there. And she loves their home, big 5 acres in the back of about 35 acres. And her husband dies, but he's been leaving every Monday morning and not coming back until Friday afternoon or Thursday afternoon, depending on which way his route was that week or plans that they had. And she tells me that she gets so nervous on Friday that Saturday just chokes her, and the thought of being there by herself on Saturday night just pushes her almost into a corner. Where for years and years and years and years, he's been gone 4 or 5 nights a week at a time, and she never felt insecure, never failed to feel safe. But now that he is gone, that object of her affection, the husband, is gone, and now she's uncomfortable being there, and she especially feels it Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. Why? Because he was always there. Another thing most women will eventually point out is, I have lost my social life. My social life. How many restaurants do you know that have tables for 3 or 5? Not many, unless the table happens to be pushed against the wall and you put the seat on each end and one out from the wall. I will tell you this. If you go in most any bar, you will find small table with 3 seats around it. Doug Williams told me that from his vast experience, that that's where you can find it. But the truth of the matter is, we live in a society set up for what? Couples. Couples. But what happens when death comes? We're single. And even most of the time, not most of the time, but even some of the time, in our closest, innermost circles, we feel isolated. We feel lonely because that companionship has slipped away from us. So what I'm about to tell you is really important. I tell ladies everywhere I go and lecture, I tell them, you've lost your social life. Do you know how you're going to get it? You're going to go out and find it. You're going to make it happen. And immediately, what is the response? I'm not looking for a man. Well, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about social life. So I'm talking to all of us now that are my age, 55 and up. You want a social life? Then you give someone else a social life. And if you'll do that, you will be amazed at how much fun you can have. After my dad died, Mom, who was kind of a talker and a little bit of a goer, and any of you all who know me know I'm speaking tongue-in-cheek. But the truth of the matter is, Mom, for the first time, did not have anywhere to go or anything to do, and she was lonesome. And I talked to Mom, and I said, Mom, there's Joe Harper, there's Don Luther, there's Tex Holliday. And I went down a list of about 6 or 8 people, and I said, why don't you invite them to go to dinner? No strings attached. Tell them you're willing to drive, and any of them that want to go, we'll all just go to dinner. Well, I don't know if I'm comfortable with that or not. And I said, come on, Mom. You're comfortable with anything. Go for it, girl. Well, she wouldn't ask the guys, but she asked the gals. And it wasn't long until the guys and the gals were going to dinner. Why? Because my mother enjoyed laughing again, and she hadn't done much of that in a while. And it was a beautiful thing to watch my mother refine her social life and redefine her social life. Lady I worked with in Florence, Alabama, she was a jewel. She gave me the most beautiful definition of grief. Grief is the loss of the dearest person I ever knew. It makes the days long and the nights even longer. And when we begin to work from that feeling and emotion side of grief and loss, what she did was an incredible thing. She, with a bunch of her other gals that were in one of the workshops that I did, they heard one lady in that group, they barely knew her, but they heard her talk about the thing she dreaded most about the fall was Monday Night Football. Why was that? Because she and her husband watched Monday Night Football every Monday night. They bought one of them lay-back recliner type things, you know, with two seats, what do they call them, theater seating, with a little cooler and a table in between them. She would do hot dogs, make popcorn, put cold drinks in the cooler, and she would find out who her husband was rooting for, and she would root for the other guy. And it was a great night for them. First Monday night of the fall, when football season came up, she was sitting there in her house, lights basically off, watching the news, and there was a... And she gets up and she opens the door, and it's her five girlfriends. And they've got stuff in every hand. And all at the same time, they go, game time! And they just didn't invite. They just came on in. Turn the TV on. Put the stuff up. Occupy one of the seats. We know that one's yours. We don't know which one's which. But we're in this one. You can have that one. Did not miss a Monday night game the rest of the year. Swapped houses. None of them knew anything about football except her till the end of the year. I say that to you because when I'm talking about bridging this gap, you and I have some responsibilities to ourselves. Some very real responsibilities. Number one, I don't know how many of us have actually sat down and discussed our financial future. I don't know how many of us have all of our will stuff done and that it's been reviewed in the last 3 to 5 years. I don't. Because I'm not 65 yet. And I'm sure Joy will get that taken care of in 4 months, so it will be done when I get 65. But how many of us have actually just sat down and talked about that? How many times have we talked about what our plans for the future are? How many times have you looked at your sweetheart, if you're fortunate enough to still have her, and to discuss with her, where do you want to spend the last 10 years that we have? Are we going to stay here? Are we going to move in close to one of the kids? Are we going to sell this house and get a smaller one? Joy and I, when we got through managing our 4 kids and finally getting them all out of the house and well-employed, or self-employed, I didn't say well-employed, but self-employed, we built our retirement house, almost 1,100 square feet. The trees come right to the edge of the roof. I don't have to mow grass. I just have to clean gutters one time a year and sweep the yard one time a year. Now, we're eventually going to get moved out there. We've had it about 4 years. But I'm trying to get out there now. But we moved down the street into a much smaller house from what we were in. What are you going to do and what do you plan on doing? Now, I'm not talking about all of us 60, 65, 70, but I am talking to us. But I'm talking to you all 50, 55, going on, getting ready to be 60. What are the plans for the rest of your life? How many of us have sat down and made those plans? Ninth Psalm, Moses speaks so specifically that we need to listen to what he says. Apparently, Moses was about the same place in his life that I am, or he wouldn't have been thinking like this, because I haven't been thinking like this long. In that 90th Psalm, which is actually a prayer of Moses, he said, Lord, thou hast been our dwelling place in all generations, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. And then he comes down to the next one and he says, you turn man loose to his own destructions, but then you say, come you back, you son of men. And then he goes down a little farther and he says, the days of our lives are, say it with me, 80 and, man, y'all need to get to work on your Bible over here. I thought everybody knew those. Let's try that again. The days of our years are 80. And if by reason of strength they be 80, yet is your strength labor and sorrow, and it's soon cut off and we fly away. But that's not important. What is important, what Moses says down there a little bit later, where he says, so teach us, O Lord, to number our days that we may do what? Gain a heart of wisdom. Moses is saying, all of a sudden it's dawned on me. It has just plain dawned on me that I need to be busy about what I'm doing, and I need to think my way into these last years of my life. Why? Because I don't have as many as I did before, and all of a sudden, life is so good. I want to use every minute of every day wisely. One of the biggest disappointments in my life is that the longest day of our year is about 14 hours. One time I took my oldest son Ryan as he was graduating high school, going to college, and my youngest son Drew, who was 13 years old. I loaded them up with a good friend of mine from Franklin, Mike, and we took off to Canada to fish. I couldn't believe. I felt like I truly had just died and gone to paradise. The sun came up about 4:30 in the morning, and the sun went down about 10:30 at night. Now you do the math. That is how many hours I fished a day for 6 solid days. And I thought it was fabulous. But the older I get, the more I want in those days, and the more special I want them to be. I might have been a fair dad, but I wasn't a great dad. I might have done a few things right, but I did more things wrong. I was more concerned about my kids graduating from college with a good education and no financial baggage to carry with them out the door. I want them to have enough money to live on their own 6 months in the bank. And I wanted them to have a car with less than 30 or 35,000 miles on it so they could get at least 3 years out of that while they were getting on their feet. You know, I succeeded in that 4 out of 4 times. But there were some things that I really, really, really left out while I was trying to get that accomplished. I'm wiser than that now. If my grandkids don't want to see me and spend time with me, they better lock the door on the house. Because Pops is coming in whether they want him to come in or not. And my wife, Mimi, she's the most incredible grandmother you'll ever meet. Unbelievable what she does for my grandkids. But during that particular crunch time in our lives, we were a little busy. Not as busy as Moses apparently was, or I think we would have tried to be more wise. I needed to have been more wise in how I used those years. So when you and I think of that, that we're getting to that point, if we take 70 years, divide it into a week, what day of the week is it for you? Davey, it's about 8 o'clock Saturday morning, and the week ends that night. Those hours are precious to me now. Very, very precious to me, because I don't have as many left. Now, for all of you who are on the other side of that gap, I hope you heard what I just said. Because I want you to realize that if you're raising children right now, most of us keep them till they're about 20. That may change a little bit depending on the economics. In Italy right now, most kids are living at home even with a college education to their mid-30s, delaying having children into their 40s because you can't afford it. But most of us will keep our kids under our thumbs till they're about 20 years old. Do you realize that if that's the case and you divide that out, if you're going to keep them 20 years and you just let that be divided out into 20 days, just think. If your child is 5 years old, you've already had that child 1 out of 4 days that you'll have that child in your keeping and in your care. If that child is 10 years old, you've already had that child 1 out of 2 days. You will basically have rule of the roost. If that child is 15 years old, you've had him 3 out of 4. You've had her 3 out of 4. When you think about it that way, and they're gone. But flip that coin, you middle-aged, sandwiched in between parents and children folks, which I once was. How long's mom and dad going to be around? How much time have you got with them? Do you remember how hard it was for them to find time for you because they were trying to put food on the table, roof over your head, and clothes on your back? They're trying to do exactly the same thing you are right now, and you've got kids at home. So you got to think about how just around the corner this stuff waits and rests. Because if you will, it will help you begin a process that will make their last years better and yours richer and fuller than you ever knew. In the book of Ecclesiastes, there's another passage of Scripture that I wanted us to think of tonight just for a moment. Because in the book of Ecclesiastes, there are these words. It's in chapter 12. And they say, "Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come, and the years draw nigh when you say, 'I have no pleasure in them.' While the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain." Two things I want to say. I want to say, don't forget now the Creator in the days of your olden age. Remember Him and draw nigh to Him, for therein is found your comfort. And then there come these words. "In the day when the keepers of the house tremble, we're not hardly as firm a step as we were at one time." And the older you get, the harder it is to tie that fish hook on that line because it just won't be still. "And the strong men bow down as their backs curve a little bit." The doctor measured me the other day. I'm now officially 6'10 and a half. I said, "Would you measure that again?" "Okay, you're 6'11 standing straight up, but you'll never really be 6'11 again. Because it all compresses. When the grinders cease because they are few." I don't have it yet, but I got to have one put right there. Because they've dropped in number since the last time I saw the dentist. I got to have one put in right there. The grinders, the teeth, are not as many as they used to be. "And those that look through the windows grow dim." Anybody else have windows? But you know what? These are some of the best days of my life. And I'm thankful for every moment of health that I have. Those of us who are older Christians think about where are we going to be. And if we're thinking from a Christian's point of view, what can I do to help those last years be good years And what can I find that those years will be valuable and well used? I love watching what our senior Christians over the years have done at home. The men who were elders, the men who mowed the yard when they were boys, the men who took care of the young people and taught classes in their middle years. And now when we've gotten to those golden years, what do? The responsibility is just as big. It's just that the tasks aren't hardly as large. I asked one fellow one day, I said, why do you go fold that bulletin every week? He said, you know, that's about the only real live, honest to goodness spiritual outreach that I have anymore. Seeing it, folks get that bulletin. But Bill Mack, I'll tell you, every time we fold it and seal it and tape it and put a stamp on it, I'm going to brighten somebody as old as I am's day, because Paul keeps us posted on everything that's going on in our family in Centerville, because they can read that. Yeah, this was the man who taught the adult ladies class. He was an adult Bible class. He was one who was an elder. He was one who was in charge of our mission program. And he was one of the main men involved in the building of Camp Mir from the ground up. But what had he done? He looked at what he could do, and he still wanted to be busy about that. And besides, when they did that together, where were they? They were together doing something in the name of the Lord, and it meant all the difference in the world to him in those latter years. But when we begin talking about what we can do, Tulipwood in Centerville, a group of men went together, borrowed money from the Housing and Urban Development Group, and we built a 7-story, 121 apartment. No, that's not right. 7-story, 71 apartment house building. And in that, we house senior people and people who are handicapped. And no, it didn't cost the church anything, but these men wanted to do something for their moms, and now some of their wives live there. It was something that could be done. But if you who are younger are wondering about what you can do for us, I actually wrote down a few things. If I could ask you, as parents of that sandwich generation, what do you want from your children? What would the answer be? You think about that a minute. If I could ask you, what do you really want from your children? From your little ones, your junior high, your high school, and your college age ones. Now, I know what you want when they get out of college. I know what you really want them to do is just leave you alone. Let me get caught back up with where Joy and I were sitting on the couch one time. Two times were quite interesting. Once it involved sitting there. All the kids had finally gone to school, and we were at home about 7:30. We're sitting on the couch watching television. And Joy looked over at me, and she very simply said, I don't guess it's any trouble to know that we've had small children in our house. I said, well, hi, honey, what are you talking about? I'm just fixed on the TV. What are you talking about? And she said, well, it's obvious we've had small children in our house. We've been sitting here for the last 25 minutes watching Sesame Street. True story. It didn't seem but like one blink of the eye till we were sitting across the couch from each other. Shay piled up in the middle of the couch in between us. Last one gone, off to college, may very well have graduated. It may have been college graduation or not high school. But I remember Joy looking at me and saying, well, I guess we'll find out now. And I said, find out what? And she said, I guess we'll find out if we still like each other. Because all of a sudden, it was just the two of us in the house. And we did. We really did. But when I was that age, what did I really want out of my children? I just wanted a little sense of respect. To give me a little credit. I wanted a pat on the back of appreciation. Sincere appreciation. Thanks, Dad. I wanted an acknowledgement of their worth to me as a father. I wanted my kids to just really and truly look at themselves and see their own worth. And at the same time, I wanted them to have some sense of the worth that I have been to them in their lives. Number five, I wanted them to give me a little credit for my accomplishments, for the things I did right. And last but not least, I really did want a thank you for what I'd done. I really didn't want to be reminded all the time of what I'd missed and what I hadn't done. I just wanted a little bit of an acknowledgement of thank you for what I'd done. And I want to tell you who are not senior citizens yet that honestly, as of today, that hasn't changed at all. I know how busy the kids are. I know how much they have going on. But of all the things that I really need today as I grow older, and I need to be reminded of this because I can't do as much as I used to. I can't think the way that I used to. I can't speak the way that I used to. I can't always communicate the way that I used to. But I would really like to know that they still respect me, that my children still have a sense of respect for me and a sense of appreciation for some of the things we did and the good times that we had. I would like to have some acknowledgement that they have caught the idea that they are truly worth something, and I still have a little worth left besides the inheritance coming, if there's any left. I would just like to have a recognition of what few accomplishments in their lives I might have made, helped them with, the accomplishments that they had, if I was a contributing factor to that. And I would just like to have a thank you for what I've done. Now, young folks, there's a lot of different ways to be able to do that. Number one, if I were to ask your parents what they would like to have more than anything else in the world, it might very well turn out to be a conversation. A real live, honest-to-goodness conversation about what they expect out of me now that I'm older and what they can do to help me grow so go that way gracefully. I would like to be able to sit down with my children, tell them about my fears. I'd like to be able to share with them how proud I am of them and what they've accomplished. I would like to be able to sit down with them and lay out before them, and hopefully I'll have a chance to do that, what their mother and I have planned and how we hope to finish this race and what we'll need if health changes quickly and what we want done in the event that it does. I would like to share with them some nature of what our financial situation is. I would like to have an opportunity to tell them some things I've never told them before. Some of those things I'm not very proud of, but I think it might help them on their journey. So I encourage both sides of this bridge to work toward that you might have a conversation. No holds barred, everything let go. But I did find some very interesting things written. And I wanted to to kind of share these before I go. This is how we feel some of the time. Number one, I'm not sure whether she's coming to visit or to check up on me. Now, there's a difference. I need credit for what I can do. What are you laughing about? There's a whole bunch of you grinning like a bunch of possums eating sawbriars. Why are you, do you ever want, why are you here? What's the deal? My mom used to give me that all the time. I'm fine. I don't need you this way yet. Why are you checking up on me all the time? And it was very easy for me to say, I am not checking up on you. I've come for a visit. And while I'm making this visit, I'm going to find out if you're all right. Some parents are annoyed by their children's overprotectiveness, but deep down inside, they appreciate the concern. You know, for the most part, we ain't done yet. We just may be getting a little close there sometimes. And we don't want you to be overprotective, but we do want you to be concerned. Because there's going to be a time when you may have to step in and say, what do you think about this? Have you ever thought about that? Biggest fear I had in my life was telling my daddy I needed the keys to the car. Keys to the truck, because he drove a barge. And one day he came walking in. I would meet Dad on the road, and it would be tunnel vision. I'd go, hey, Dad! Because he was focused on what was right. And he sat right up on the steering wheel. Pull that seatbelt out as far as it goes. It couldn't have kept him from mashing his nose for anything. One day he walked in to the office of the funeral home, set his keys on the counter and said, son, will you run me home? I said, I will, Dad. What's wrong? I can't stand these driving children anymore. I have to come through that school zone on the way in and they are scaring me to death. So I'm not driving anymore. And my daddy didn't pick up the keys again. Now, he bought a four-wheeler and had a mighty good time on it, but he didn't drive the car anymore. Sometimes, folks, we need to kind of understand that maybe that time's coming. And we need to listen when they speak their voice of concern. Number three, there is a time or two that, according to this thing, some parents just want to say, buzz off, get lost. But the truth of the matter is, we really don't want you to do that. We want you to give us the consideration we deserve. But more than anything, we want you to help us finish this race gracefully. That's what we want. And the best way to do that, take the time to have the talk and to discuss how we want things to go and how we want things to be, and listen to us. Listen to us. Don't point out all we can't do, all that we're not going to do, all that we're not going to have time to do, all that we can't afford to do. Just listen and then help us find our way to as much of that stuff as we can do. Because what we want to be least of all is a burden to you. But there may come a time when we need more help from you than we ever wanted to take. And I hope we who need to take that can take it gracefully and with much appreciation, but especially with much planning. As Moses simply said, so Lord, teach us to use this time we have left wisely at both ends of the bridge. Would you bow as we pray? Father, thanks for these good folks, many of whom have worshipped here since in my early 20s, which has now turned into the mid-60s. Spoke words of encouragement, gave direction, guided, helped, till the soil of my life to make it richer. I thank you so much for what they've done. The generations of Christians that have been raised within the walls and the confines of this building, and the gift they have been to the world. I pray, Father, that you would be merciful to those of us who are growing older, that you would help us take our frailties one day at a time, and with a sense of submission, but not a sense of giving up. That you would help us to find a way to stay busy and active and alive, a way that we might help, and a way that we might find those who would help us. Care for us always. Bless us with that home with Thee in heaven when that hour comes. And when our time is finished, Father, help us to look forward to the crossing over and not live in fear of it. Bless our kids as they help us get to that crossing over place. In the name of your Son, we pray. Amen.